Hi, I'm Rick Reynolds, and you're listening to Affair Recovery Radio, Radio to the Power of God. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, sponsors, or advertisers of this station. Due to the sensitive nature of the topics discussed on this program, it is not suitable for children, so we strongly advise that children not be within listening range of this program. Also, please be advised that while we are counselors, what we're doing here tonight is not counseling, and if you have a need, we strongly advise that you seek professional help. The Affair Recovery Center is a community of counseling professionals and couples who have experienced the abundant blessing of reconciliation and renewal. We are dedicated to the restoration of marriages crippled by infidelity. Our mission is to offer hope, support, and recovery for couples and individuals who have suffered the pain as a result of infidelity, betrayal, or sexual addiction. We truly believe there's nothing the nearness of God cannot heal.
Well, good evening to you all. This is John Haney, and I'm very pleased to be joined by my beautiful wife, Leslie, over there.
Hi.
Well, I hope you're having a great pre-Thanksgiving weekend. I guess about a week from now, the big shopping insanity all starts. Are you going to get out in that?
I'm not. I don't know if you are.
No, I'm not planning on doing everything by the internet this year, I think.
I was like sitting home and watching all those people at the mall, and I'm glad I wasn't there.
Well, tonight, you know, for weeks we've been talking about on this program, we've been sort of focused on recovery from people in the midst of disclosure or actual infidelity, be it an affair or a sexual addiction. And tonight, Leslie and I are going to talk about what happens next, kind of what happens after that for a couple. Specifically, we want to talk about the issue of how a couple, after there has been infidelity, can get back into a normal pattern of marriage and into a normal pattern of physical intimacy.
Whatever normal might be. Sometimes we joke about normal is a cycle on a washing machine, so don't worry too much about normal. Because sometimes, actually, as people go through the pain of infidelity and come out on the other side, they will say their marriage, their sexual relationship isn't just normal, it's much better than it's ever been.
Right.
And just want to remind you that we would love to have any questions from callers. Also, we'd love it if you would call in and be willing to share about things that maybe you did with your marriage or your sexual relationship after the initial shock of the infidelity and the overwhelming pain wore off some. You know, what did you do that helped? Maybe what did you do that didn't work so well? But please feel free to call us.
Yeah, we understand this is a topic that makes people pretty shy sometimes.
And the phone number is 512-365-9930. And you can call us from anywhere, and we're not going to recognize your voice. So it's actually a rare and wonderful opportunity. And we're going to start the show off talking about sexuality and sex within marriage, and we're going to end it by talking about marriage.
All right. Well, just to kind of get us going with that, Leslie, if I were to ask you kind of what is a betrayed spouse looking for, let's say maybe 6 months after disclosure from infidelity has happened, what do you think they're looking for in terms of getting their marriage back to, in their physical intimacy back to a place of something that somewhat resembles normal?
Well, actually, where they are 6 months after disclosure, depending on how recovery has gone, where they are may be disappointing to their spouse because they may not be as far down the road of recovery as their spouse would like. Because what I see often in my office at about 6 months is the person who's been unfaithful is having a lot of fear and frustration because they feel like the other person's never going to get over it. And the person who's been betrayed feels like maybe they're never going to get over it because they feel pushed along, or people around them say, you should be farther along, you should be past this. And so 6 months down the road, a lot of couples are still pretty fragile. And what most betrayed spouses are still looking for is an increased sense of safety. As trust is reestablished in the marriage, first the betrayed spouse has to know the unfaithful spouse can, well, first they have to know that they want to do it, that they want to be faithful, they want to be committed. Then they have to know that they're able, and then it has to last for a while before it starts to feel real. And generally, it takes at least 3 months of a consistent behavior for the other partner to believe that it's real. The first 3 months can feel like manipulation. Oh, well, they're just faking it, so I'll get over it. But after about 3 months, they're beginning to think, oh, this is real. This person is committed. We have hope. But 6 months, sometimes they're still pretty fragile.
Definitely. And I think getting back to that thing you were talking about, sort of how normal is a very relative term, you know, my experience has also been that I think people who are going through infidelity have been in such a crisis response mode for so long, and the affair and the betrayal has been front and center for so long that little issues with the marriage just kind of tend to fall by the wayside. And then suddenly you're looking at having to, you know, after you're starting to get some sense of healing from the infidelity, you know, this big question mark of what do you do with the marriage now?
Well, and more specifically, the sexual relationship, because, you know, regardless of how your sexual relationship was before the discovery of the infidelity is going to affect your sexual relationship. There's no way around it.
Yeah, well, and for so many couples, the sexual relationship was used as an excuse, or, you know, deficits in the sexual relationship for the betrayer's behavior, you know, and there's a lot of pain that could get tied into the sexual behavior then.
Well, and hopefully 6 months down the road, they're able to have more authentic conversations, because as we've mentioned in earlier programs, when the person who's been unfaithful gets caught, a lot of times they've rewritten history, and they rewrite history so what they've done is more understandable or isn't as despicable. And so a lot of times they'll say, never enjoyed our sexual life. You know, we were never having enough sex. When in fact, 6 months down the road, as they're putting the whole picture back together, they may feel quite differently.
Mm-hmm.
And so if, you know, at disclosure, you heard a lot of negative things about your sexual relationship, you really need to keep talking about it, because their viewpoint may change.
That's good advice.
Well, as we talk about sexuality and sexual relationships within marriage, I was thinking when I was growing up, I used to watch The Newlywed Show. And one day, Bob Eubanks asked couples, you know, what percentage of their marriage was sex a part of? That's a really bad statement, but hopefully you know what I mean. But and it was interesting because, you know, even though he called it whoopee, I knew what he was talking about. And people, you could see their frustration, their embarrassment as they're sharing this information, even trying to guess. And the disparity between the couples was interesting. I remember watching that. And even though we hear the word sex on television, maybe we see it, we don't politely refer to it as whoopee anymore, most couples don't talk about sex in any more authentic, meaningful way now than they did in the early 70s when I saw that show.
No, and that's a real shame, and I probably have to say, too, that I'm amazed, knowing your mother, that she let you watch The Newlywed Show, but back when you were younger.
Well, I don't think she ever watched it, so it was okay.
But, you know, I think the tragedy of that is sex has sort of been hijacked by secular society and by Hollywood and by people who really don't have a good vision for it. But the tragedy of it is, it is a gift. It is a godly gift that was given to us. So out of all the places we probably should be talking about it, it should be in Christian circles and in church. And it's something we shouldn't be embarrassed to talk about, because it's very much designed to be something, an integral part of who we are.
So before we go to break, what are some of the most common mistakes that you see people make after betrayal in their sexual relationship?
On just sort of the actual sexual nature of it, or trying to get back into?
I mean, just right up front, we're not even talking about 6 months down the road, the mistake that they might make in the first month.
I think probably the biggest one I see is trying to push the physical intimacy too fast. I mean, people are coming out of sort of a crisis mode, and suddenly, you know, to try, it, you know, sex is really built on safety and trust and connection. And, you know, when there's been, you know, someone in your life who's ripped your heart out, sometimes it's not that easy to immediately get back into an old pattern of that deep of an intimacy that, you know, that sort of the level of intimacy sex was meant to be. So and so I think some couples trying to force a false normal will push it way too fast. And, you know, and I know you've seen this one, but I think one that I see very often is trying to compete with the ex-affair partner or the pornography or whatever the case, you know, the case was, where they feel like to connect with them, that, you know, they have to be what that person was looking for outside the marriage. And so they lose a little bit of themselves with that. And, you know, probably can talk some more of this. I know we're up against a break, but...
But we'll have more when we come back. Give us a call. 512-365-9930.
Does your life seem void of meaning? Do you struggle with depression? Is marriage not turning out as expected? Are you disappointed in the intimacy you share? Has an unwanted behavior taken your life hostage? Do uncontrollable feelings flood uninvited into your life? If so, we can help. Crossroads Counseling is a group of highly trained mental health professionals dedicated to Jesus. Crossroads Counseling is unique in its team approach. Each member has developed a specialty in order to complement their overall goal of helping each person they serve experience the freedom and abundant life afforded through the life of Christ. Give us a call, 512-346-9299. That's 512-346-9299. Or visit our website at crossroads-counseling.net. There is hope and healing. We believe there's nothing the nearness of God cannot heal.
Hi, this is George Woolley with The Word. Have you heard the Homeward Bound show?
Man, your ring just pinged. Would you like to pick it up? Glorifying our God, enhancing your life, and having some fun along the way. Have you heard about this?
And it's our duty to go out and meet people where they are.
And we need to get in there and find people.
It is a message that is getting through.
Homeward Bound with Richard Curley, you and the rest of Austin. Weekdays 4 to 6, only on The Word, 99.3 and 98.5. Teaching and talk for Austin and Central Texas.
Welcome back. I'm Leslie, and it's John and me. Well, bad grammar. John and I are here tonight.
Your mother would be appalled again here.
Yeah, I'm shocking my mother and John. Really terrible grammar there. We're in the middle of talking about some of the most common mistakes people make in their sexual relationship after infidelity has been discovered.
Yeah, well, I think another big one is acting like it didn't happen. You know, it's sort of this horrible, you know, pink elephant that's been in the marriage and suddenly acting like it wasn't there at all, and just assuming that you can sort of force things into going back into something that looks like normal without really addressing it. And I just think that's a really bad idea, because, you know, it's one of those situations where if you don't manage those feelings, they will manage you, and they will manage to interrupt your intimacy life in your marriage, both emotionally and sexually. It's a recipe for disaster if you don't look at that. And you know, sort of akin to that is acting like it doesn't bother them at all. You know, they may have some wounds that haven't really healed yet.
Right.
And that goes back to, I know, you know, don't want to put that F word out there, forgiveness, because Leslie is likely to go way off on that one.
Yeah, I'll get on my soapbox about forgiveness.
But, you know, finally, I mean, one that I see a lot kind of dealing with couples coming out of something like this is that they try to use their old understanding of sex when they try to reconnect and establish their intimacy. You know, with recovery, there's sort of a paradigm shift that happens in our lives. We get to a place of brokenness and recognize our reliance upon God, but sometimes we don't always follow suit in our sexuality. I think sometimes we just start going back to business as normal and trying to do our sex lives like we did before everything sort of broke, and without sort of recognizing sort of a new paradigm of godly sexuality and just trying to play the old games in the marriage.
Well, and you bring up godly sexuality. We need to get back to that after we finish the most common mistakes so people understand what we're talking about. What are other mistakes that you can think of?
Well, those are the big ones that I tend to see. I mean, any you would add?
I guess just a couple. One is that sometimes the betrayed spouse will force themselves to have sex, even though they don't want to. They think that they should. And maybe they were doing that in the marriage before, but forcing yourself to have sex is going to backfire, and it's going to backfire pretty quickly. Sometimes people do it, and they find themselves feeling used.
Yeah, or worse. I mean, one of the saddest things is hearing a couple talking about how, you know, how she cries through the whole thing or something because she doesn't feel the connection or doesn't feel, you know, sort of valued or that it's a two-way interaction.
Right. 'Cause, and I'm trying to think if there are any other things, but I guess just overall it just seems like a lot of times couples either use sex one way or another way.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they use sex as a solution or they use sex as a punishment. And in doing either of those after discovery, or not, it's not going to work. It will backfire.
Absolutely.
So back to godly sex.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's, you know, really one of the biggest questions in marriage, and one of the biggest questions I think as Christians we have to try to get our head around is, you know, what is the purpose of sex? Why, you know, and we could probably have a day-long program kind of dissecting that, but you know, really I think it comes down to a few primary things. I mean, certainly there is the procreation function, the reproductive function, you know, making children. I mean, without sex, we couldn't continue our species. But unfortunately, I think with Christians, sometimes we stop there. We think that that's sort of the only reason that God gave us sexuality and gave us, you know, gave us our bodies. And that, and I don't believe that. I think there's a couple other aspects of godly sexuality. I mean, I think the second part is a very, very important one, and that's the unitive aspect of sexuality. It's the two flesh becoming one. It's two people coming together. There's a reason why our bodies are so different. They don't make sense without relation to the other. I mean, you know, if you just look at anatomy, it's just sort of a ridiculous thing if you look at it in isolation. But together, it fits this sort of divine plan, and it's a beautiful thing that was designed between two people and nothing. You know, I mean, sex is a very, very powerful kind of force that can draw two people closer together. It can increase the bond between two people in a relationship. And I think the third aspect of godly sexuality is the one I think that makes people most uncomfortable sort of questioning that, and that is that sex was designed to be pleasurable. Our bodies were designed that way. I mean, God did not have to make us that way. It didn't have to go down that way. But I think where we get into trouble sometimes, just to kind of qualify that a little bit, I think sometimes in our society, we start believing that we can have sort of the pleasure or the recreational aspect of sex without bothering to try to worry about the unitive aspect of sexuality or the procreative aspect of it. And we just sort of try to turn it into a recreational drug almost, where we're not really appreciating the depth and really, I guess the word I would use is the responsibility that comes with it, that with such a powerful gift comes also a powerful sense that we need to use it correctly as it was designed to be used. And I think that's where a lot of people get into trouble, is they don't bother to worry about those other parts. They're just sort of pursuing the, you know, sort of the high of the next conquest or just sort of exploiting sex.
Well, and I guess one of the things that I see a lot is people will come in and it's like they've decided spiritual is good, sexual is bad. Spiritual is good, sexual is bad. And so they don't have a connection of the two. So they've almost like split themselves in two.
Definitely. Whereas I think, you know, when it's done the way God intended it for to be done, there's no place, I think, where spirituality really overlaps more than sexuality and spirituality, where sort of that communion really overlaps more. It was really, I think, designed to be sort of one of the highest experiences of the life we live here. But in our guilt and our shame, sometimes I think we tend to sort of pathologize sexuality, and we sort of pathologize the gift along with it. And I think that's the tragedy of it. You know, there are lots of people obviously are misusing sexuality. Otherwise, we would be doing something else for a living. but, you know, we can't throw the baby out with the bathwater. We can't just suddenly start saying that sex is bad because some people are doing bad things with it. It's still a gift.
Well, one of the things that I see over and over and over is desire disorder. And I don't know if we've mentioned this before, but John's actually working on his certification as a sex therapist. So he's become a little bit of an expert. And he's told me that desire disorder and arousal disorder are actually two different things. And so for couples who might be experiencing one or the other, could you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. A desire disorder is basically an issue or a problem with somebody's will or desire to want to engage in sexual behavior. It's more about...
So is it withholding sex?
It can be if, I mean, sometimes a person's heart is not in it, and I mean, that can be manipulation too, but I mean...
So how does their partner know whether it's manipulation or they're actually struggling with desire?
Well, I think one of the difficult things for someone struggling with desire, sometimes they have a hard time communicating that to their spouse because it can seem embarrassing. I mean, it can seem like it can really go to the core of their femininity or their masculinity. But I think some honest communication and sort of clearing the air on some of that, because, you know, an arousal disorder, on the other hand, is more of a physiological issue. It's a problem with the mechanics of our bodies and our sexual anatomy, and those, you know, all those wonderful commercials you see for the little pills during the football games, that's more for arousal disorders. But desire tends to be much more complicated because there's much more of a thinking function to it, an emotional aspect to it. And sometimes through a lot of hurt, through a lot of, you know, betrayal, as we see a lot of, it destroys the sense of safety in the physical intimacy in a relationship, and so sometimes desire can be fairly difficult to try to recharge that, you know, because a lot of people will emotionally start disengaging from a relationship, you know, and sort of getting that old spark back. And by the way, you know, there's a lot of drugs out there for dealing with arousal disorders, but they have yet to find anything that will work from a pharmacological standpoint for desire, and I don't think they ever will. I think it's something that comes from within us.
Well, for the listeners, male or female, who might be out there listening, who are kind of identifying with the desire disorder, what would you tell them?
Well, it's you know, there's no kind of simple answer on how to do that. Every case tends to be very, very different. You know, one of the first things I always like to look at is to really start with addressing the resentments in the relationship. You know, places where people really haven't found a sense of healing or where people feel like that they haven't been heard, or, you know, and kind of the safety aspect of it. And you know, another, you know, closely tied to that, sometimes I think it's from a therapeutic standpoint, look at the power differential in a relationship, particularly when it comes to sexuality. We may have certain roles in one aspect of our marriage, but when it comes to sex, the power differential changes. And usually the person who's withholding sex or is uncomfortable with sex actually has a whole lot more power in the sexual dynamic in the relationship, because they get to control the drawbridge on the sexual act. And you know, for the person who is asking for it, they're making themselves very, very vulnerable to do that. And sometimes, you know, they just get tired of asking and being shot down. And so sometimes they'll throw up the white flag too and just sort of back off from asking. And then you get this situation where one person's not asking anymore, but they're feeling very hurt, and the other person's not initiating because they still don't feel like trying to connect. And so it just can go into a really stagnant kind of detente almost in a relationship. But I think we're up against getting up close to another break here, so I'll pick this up when we get back. But you are listening to A Fair Recovery Radio, and if you did want to give us a call, it's 512-365-9830.
9930.
Okay, I'm always a little early here.
Hope for the brokenhearted. Hope for those who have made a mistake. Hope for those impacted by betrayal. Hope for couples who feel no hope. The Affair Recovery Center is designed to offer hope, direction, and help for couples and individuals whose lives have been ripped by infidelity. There is hope at the Affair Recovery Center. We can all personally testify to what God can do by what we have personally experienced. Let us help. We are a community of counseling professionals and couples who have experienced the abundant blessing of reconciliation and renewal. We are dedicated to the restoration of marriages crippled by infidelity. Our mission is to offer hope, support, and recovery for couples and individuals who have suffered pain as a result of infidelity, betrayal, or sexual addiction. We can be reached at affairrecovery.com, or you can call toll-free at 888-527-2367. That's 888-527-2367.
You listen to us, and we listen to you.
Thank you guys for what you're doing for the entire Hill Country.
It's not nearly so tiring when you're doing things that you love doing.
Quite unusual, this one.
Feed your body and your spirit.
And it paved the way for most of the things we cherish the most in the modern world.
I just keep praying that your satellite goes out further so people can hear what you've got. You've got great ministry there, and we appreciate you.
The Word, 99.3 and 98.5, teaching and talk for Austin and Central Texas.
Welcome back. We are here at the Affair Recovery Center Radio, and tonight we are talking about sort of how do you get back into the business of being married after recovering from infidelity.
And particularly the sexual part of the marriage.
Yeah, and we were talking about sort of how you treat, you know, sort of that lack of desire, and just started talking about that a little bit. And again, we don't have the time to kind of go into all the things, but a couple more thoughts. You know, one of the things that's really important is getting people comfortable together again. And that can be a very difficult uphill climb after there's been betrayal. You know, we talked earlier about sex being about safety and trust. And ultimately, the word I would most use probably is connection. You know, it's about really connecting with one another, not just physically, but connecting emotionally, connecting spiritually. You know, good sex should be firing on all those cylinders. And when there's been a hurt, it's hard to do that. You know, one of the treatments we do for that sometimes is you know, what in the secular world is sometimes called sensate focus activities and things like that, where we teach people to touch each other again, but without touching sexually for a while. It's just about teaching them, sort of retraining them to be around each other, to be around each other's bodies, and do that without any sense of pressure or expectation that anything has to happen. You know, just kind of learning how to touch again. But I think, you know, going back to forgiveness again, I think that is such a critical element of this, and really addressing, you know, really making sure that you sort of, you know, through the light of Christ, making sure that there's not any lingering hurt or any lingering resentment, lingering place or lingering secrecy where people aren't able to really share what's going on in their heart, because that's where sort of fertile ground for a lot of sexual dysfunction happens. But, you know, another sort of, you know, arch villain in all of this would be shame. I mean, I think there's so
Absolutely.
Much shame tied into potentially both partners on this. You know, the person who's been the betrayer, who's been, you know, involved in a sexual addiction, often has a lot of their own shame. They feel like, you know, they've let everybody down. And even if they get through that in their healing, the betrayed spouse can have a lot of shame too. I mean, they may feel like, you know, they weren't good enough, that you know, or they may be ashamed about how they're reacting now, or how their body is reacting now.
Well, and if Oprah's right, something like over 85% of women don't even feel comfortable with their own bodies.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's you know, study after study has sort of demonstrated that, and that's a tragedy. It's just like you know, and yeah, I largely blame Hollywood and the media for all that, because women are literally bombarded with images of perfect women who, of course, have been airbrushed and represent sort of 0.0001% of what most women actually look like. And you know, and it's a real tragedy. But you know, in the human sexuality course I teach and in my counseling, you know, repeatedly see that. I mean, really, you know, very attractive women who have a lot of shame about their bodies. And I just think it's so much harder for a little girl to sort of own her body than it is for a for a boy to. There's a whole lot of other social factors, and that's another topic. But that body shame is a critical piece. And I think sometimes recovering from this and really treating desires is almost about re-educating about sexuality and re-educating about what our bodies are and that our bodies are holy things. I mean, there was a reason why our Savior was in the womb of Mary. It wasn't...
Well, and you even called it a womb.
Yeah,
you didn't call it a uterus.
It's a uterus. I mean, God, throughout mythology, there's all these wonderful stories about how divine creatures came into being, and God chose to bring the Savior into the world through the uterus of a woman. And if that doesn't make saying, if that's not a strong statement that a woman's body is a holy thing and that her sexual anatomy is a holy thing, then nothing is.
Well, because the other part of that is God chose to enter human history in a human body. And I think that also speaks honor of the body.
Well, definitely. And sometimes we so sexualize the reproductive anatomy that we forget what a miraculous thing it really is. And I am never cease to be amazed when we really think about sort of the dance of creation itself that's going on, within our sexual anatomy and sort of the fineness of the tuning on the machine. It's just such an incredible creation, and it is miraculous. Those parents out there who've witnessed, carrying a child for 9 months and then seeing it born, it's a beautiful thing.
It's a miraculous thing. And I guess getting back to sexual relationship within marriage, you can see he has a passion for talking about sexuality, and I think that's great. One of the things that I think is really, really key is learning how to talk authentically. I'll see couples in the office, whether they've dealt with infidelity or not, and maybe they've been married for 20 years. And they're saying, well, it was good. Well, parts of it were good, but it could have been better. And nobody knows what anybody's talking about. And for some couples, the safety in your sexual relationship has eroded to the point you may need a third person to help you talk about it. One of the books that we recommend a lot is a book called Restoring the Pleasure.
It's a great book.
By Penner and Penner. And the first exercise in that book is a communication exercise. And it's amazing as I've watched couples try to answer the questions and kind of their struggles with it. Because it's important to talk about initiation. How do we say no? Because a lot of times one person's trying to initiate, but they're not doing it in a way that's clear to the other person. Or they're throwing out words that the other person finds offensive. And how we decline, I think, is really critical. I know we've mentioned it on an earlier program about the book, The Five Love Languages. But if you can ask your spouse what helps them feel loved, besides sex, and when you decline, you can give them a gift of love, even if you don't feel like being sexually engaged. It can really help with the rejection.
Most definitely, and that's, again, where the communication is so critical.
Because the other thing that I see happens a lot is the demand for sex has gotten wrapped up with any sort of physical affection. Talking about it in a group the other night, one of my women's groups, she loves to hug her husband. She loves to kiss him. But she's begun to withdraw because she feels like if she hugs him and kisses him, it might lead to sex.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really important to be able to separate out your sexual relationship with physical affection. Because they both will help connect the couple, and they'll both really begin to tear people apart.
Definitely. And that's, don't have time to really go in this either, but that's where it's important to remember that men and women respond differently, and our bodies sort of react differently to sexuality, and women don't tend to get that rapid fire start that a lot of men do, and they generally need to feel really safe, need to feel really connected and everything before the arousal will even kick in for a woman. And so if a guy is always sort of pushing it or always trying to feel like one little touch is going to lead automatically to the next thing, she's not going to feel safe.
Well, and just to be perfectly clear with those of you who are listening, we have a lot of couples, it's the exact opposite. that it's the woman who really feels loved by having sex. And it's the man that really needs to feel loved.
Definitely.
To be willing to sexually engage. And so that can go both ways in the couple. So I don't want you to feel like freaks out there.
No, and again, you know, one of those messages of shame is that somehow we think that our stuff is always uglier, that our issues are always worse, and that you know, our thoughts are always more deviant than everybody else's. And you know, that's why when we actually start dialoguing with people on this stuff, it's just such a relief to actually be able to talk about it for once, you know.
Well, the lady that was talking about it, you know, last week, her face was visibly relieved when she realized that she's not the only one who feels that way.
Right.
Because we don't talk about it, and so we feel like it is only us.
And I mean, yeah, I hear that all the time when speaking to a group or something, is just, you know, someone will bravely put something out there, and, you know, you can just see the relief in so many other faces, because you can see them saying, God, I thought I was the only one who thought that, you know, or felt that way. And you see that just about everybody does. Everybody has those questions and those, you know, those embarrassing little secrets that they feel like they have to carry to their grave.
Right. And I also think it's helpful as couples are working towards reengaging sexually, if they figure out how do they reengage emotionally, how do they reengage spiritually. So it's not just sexual intimacy, that they're actually building the other parts of intimacy in their relationship and moving towards that, instead of just, as you said earlier, you know, just going back to how things were. Because I do think we've mentioned it, but at our EMS weekends, we have mentor couples come out and talk. There are couples who are farther down the road who have recovered from infidelity. And time again, those couples, both of them will say, our marriage has never been this good. Our sexual relationship has never been this good. So it is possible to really completely recover and maybe even benefit. But a lot of it is communication.
Mm-hmm. And that's a wonderful thing for those of you who are still kind of wondering where you're going with this and all that. I mean, the wonderful news is, you know, going back to that idea we've talked about again and again, that our worst becomes God's best. I mean, when people can really go through recovery and really let themselves be broken and really learn how to be honest with each other, the sex tends to be better than anything you've ever had experienced in your life before, because you are really firing on all cylinders. There's nothing being held back. You're able to completely give yourself to the other person.
So what are some of the ways that you see people avoid emotional intimacy?
Avoid emotional intimacy, and you know, and not to gender stereotype, but often guys can be very bad at this, but there are women out there who can too. But I think some of the things that I see is you know, people ages don't make the time for it. You know, they don't value that part of their existence. You know, it's kind of like if there's time, great, but if not, you know, we'll try to, you know, pencil it in next month sometime, and they don't make it a priority in their the relationship. But I think also sometimes it's, you know, probably the biggest answer I'd give is just not risking, not being willing to risk. And see that again and again, and don't know the quote exactly from C.S. Lewis, but there's something along the lines of that, you know, to choose not to risk is to choose not to love. I mean, if you're not willing to put yourself out there, you know, you may feel like you're getting this sense of safety that comes with it, but you're also really losing the chance to really, really connect with somebody else. And I think I've also seen people avoid it by just getting too possessive of themselves.
What do you mean by that?
Their stuff becomes the top priority. That it's getting sort of this narcissistic.
So they get
pattern.
Selfish.
Yeah, they get selfish. They don't want to really give of themselves. They're looking more from what sex can do for me or what my partner can do for me, without that aspect of what I can do for them and how we can do for each other, how we can connect, how we can unite. It's just being stingy and being selfish with our, you know, really giving of ourselves. I mean, some people have a really easy time pulling off the physical aspect of it. I mean, you know, that's no big deal. Unfortunately, there's lots of teenagers who are doing that with, but to really give of themselves emotionally, to really be honest, to really be transparent, that's a tough thing. But most people are, I wouldn't say most, but a lot of people are holding back and just not being willing to take that step. And and give of themselves that much, and it's not something we're really trained to do. And I think that's where when we sort of talk about retraining for sexuality, we have to sort of relearn on God's plan, not the world's. And I guess that puts us up back about another break point here. But
and when we come back, we're going to be talking more about marriage.
It's a dirty little secret. Infidelity can be cured. Betrayal doesn't have to end in divorce. In fact, the best marriages I know are those that have recovered from betrayal. Join us each Sunday evening from 9 to 10 o'clock at Affair Recovery Radio and experience God's greatest miracle, the miracle of redemption. Affair Recovery Radio, radio to the power of God on KLGO 99.3. 98.5.
This is Jack Graham of PowerPoint Ministries. Please join me each weekday at 1 p.m. for PowerPoint, right here on The Word 99.3 and 98.5, teaching and talk for Austin and Central Texas.
Welcome back to Affair Recovery Radio. Please give us a call at 512-365-9930. We've been talking about sexual relationship within marriage, and this portion of the program, we're going to talk more about marriage. But as we kind of transition into that, I would just say that a lot of times the sexual relationship within the marriage reflects the state of the marriage,
mm-hmm.
and the sexual problems within the marriage are often the same problems they're having in other areas of their marriage.
Oh, I would agree.
And sex isn't the solution, and a lot of times it's not the problem, but it can show a couple what the problems are. The marriage model that we use at the Affair Recovery Center is based on long-term research done by a man named John Gottman. And I just want to reiterate that as I talk about this, I'm not suggesting that marriage was terrible to begin with. We've had couples who had great marriages. They led marriage weekends, and one of the partners had a sexual addiction. So please don't get the message that we're saying your marriage was messed up and that's why your spouse was unfaithful. And please don't get that message about your sexual relationship either. But John Gottman has been doing research on couples for over 30 years. And as he studied couples, he has found that there's only one difference between couples who are happily married for 50 years, and they both say it. He calls them the masters, versus those who aren't. He calls them the disasters, is that their marriages are, well, their communication, their interactions are 5 times more positive than negative. It doesn't mean that there isn't negative in there, because if you're going to be able to communicate authentically, as we suggest, there will be some negative things. There will be things that need to be worked on. But it's not so much that the couples agree about everything. They don't necessarily see eye to eye. It's how they disagree that's really important. And so after infidelity is discovered, it's really easy to develop a negative lens. And so even if it's fresh, I would encourage you to prayerfully consider that your unfaithful spouse is more than just an unfaithful person, that there are still things about them that drew you to them in the beginning. They may feel like lies right now, but they're still there,
mm-hmm.
because we all have positives and negatives. And so I would encourage you to prayerfully consider what some of those positives that drew you in the beginning might be. And to go back in history and think about when you met. Because, yeah, it's easy to have a very, very negative lens right now. And as John was saying, C.S. Lewis talks about to love is to risk. But he also goes on to say that the only place outside of heaven that we're safe from the potential hurt of love is hell. And I think that's a good thing to keep in mind, because as you close yourself off and protect yourself, you really are creating a hell of a kind. And so as you think about doing your marriage again, and forgiving the other person, as John was saying, There are seven bad habits in ailing marriages that Gottman talks about. The first one is criticism. And this is something that I'm working on, Dawn can tell you. I tend to be critical of myself, and so I tend to be critical of my sweet mate. And the antidote to criticism is complaining, and that may sound strange. But the difference is criticism goes at the other person, what's wrong with you? Complaining is more wah-wah. I don't feel heard when. I don't feel important when.
And I'm pretty good with the wah-wah.
But it's being able to say, you know, when you come home and you go straight to the computer, I feel like I'm not very important. I feel hurt. I feel alone. Instead of saying, what's wrong with you? Why are you always on the computer? Which is criticism. The second bad habit is defensiveness. And the response to criticism is usually defensiveness. One person goes at the other, what's wrong with you? The second person comes back, nothing's wrong with me, what's wrong with you? And the antidote to defensiveness is taking partial responsibility. It's not arguing about who was more responsible, but it's more like when my kids were young and they would come to me and they were arguing and he said, she said, he did, that kind of thing. And I'd look at them and say, you know, it doesn't really matter who started it. Did you both act right? And no, they never did. But, you know, that's true in marriage too. A lot of times couples will say, well, you know, he started it, but they weren't acting right either. So it's being able to take care of your side of the street. The next one is contempt. And contempt is taking criticism up a notch. It's going from what's wrong with you to I'm better than you. And a lot of times it has a facial expression, an eye roll. You're communicating to the other person you're superior. And the antidote to that is creating a culture of appreciation and praise. And after you've been hurt by infidelity, it's very easy to feel superior. I've had a lot of people say, well, I would never do that, or I'm better than that, or I have more integrity. But if you're able to consider the humanity of your spouse, the good qualities, it will help.
Yeah, I think that kind of righteous indignation is a defense that we use in a lot of Christian contexts.
Which, but. And I'm not saying you don't have a reason to be angry. You don't have a reason to be hurt. And sin is sin. But looking at another person strictly through the lens of their sin is just seeing them very one-dimensionally. The fourth bad habit is stonewalling. And the antidote to this one is self-soothing, because actually the person who's stonewalling has gone into themselves, and they're telling themselves, if I just ignore it, it will go away. Physiologically, if a person's heart rate, depending on their fitness level, goes over about 100 beats per minute, they're incapable of any rational conversation, and that's what the stonewaller has done. They've gone into flight. They may not have left the room, but they've gone inside of themselves. Their heart rate is up. They need to self-soothe and come back. The fifth bad habit is a fast startup. When your spouse comes to the door, and right now, if your spouse has been unfaithful and they come to the door, it's going to be a fearful situation if they're late. But fast startup is like, where have you been? Why are you late? Instead of a soft startup, you know, being late. You're being late really scares me. When you're late, I'm afraid you're doing something. That's more of a soft startup. The sixth bad habit is failure to accept influence. And this is kind of, it's my way or the highway sort of thing. And it's not about giving the other person everything that they want, but it's letting them know that you hear what they're saying, and that you're willing to respond to what they're saying, that you're not just disregarding it, you haven't just decided you're right and they're wrong, you're willing to talk about it. And then the last one is a demand withdrawal. A lot of times the person who's more verbal will process verbally, they'll process quickly. The other person processes more slowly and more internally. And so one person will say, what do you think about blah? And the other person's like, I don't know. And they don't, because they're already starting to emotionally flood. So this pattern is created where one person's pursuing, one person's trying to hide, and both are terrified. And I know that that's a really kind of brief synopsis, but if you're interested in any of John Gottman's books, I highly recommend them.
It's good stuff. And again, I think sometimes there's so much going on. There's been this whole whirlwind going on that, you know, even under the best of circumstances, marriage is hard work and it's a learning curve. And you know, so like we've said so many times before, we encourage you all to have a lot of grace with yourselves and with each other. As you know, this is sometimes we don't get a nice little guidebook when we take the vows, or we just sort of assume that because it's been so easy to do the romantic part of the relationship, that sort of the harder work down the road is just going to be a piece of cake too. You know, in pre-marriage counseling all the time, we hear the young couple who says, oh, you know, we'll bring up some real issues or what we see as red flags, and oh, well, love will conquer all, you know, because they're still in that sort of heady romantic place. And it is work. And it's tough stuff.
It is, but we obviously think it's worthwhile work.
Absolutely. So I guess we're getting near wrapping it up here. You know, certainly want to wish you all a very, very happy holiday season. And know sometimes, too, that for those of you who are in the midst of pain right now, Thanksgiving and Christmas can be very, very painful holidays. And just recognize there's still a lot of hope out there. And there will come a day where the sky can look blue again.
Right, because the pain that you have today isn't the pain that you'll have a year from now. So thanks for being with us tonight. Good night.
And happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you for joining us tonight and being a part of the newest addition to our services, Affair Recovery Radio, radio through the power of God. We'd like to invite you to go to our website, AffairRecovery.com, and register for our free newsletter, as well as taking advantage of our free podcast. You will find that these resources are invaluable if you're trying to recover from some form of betrayal. We are here to help. We can also be contacted at 888-5-ARC-EMS. That's 888-5-ARC-EMS. And remember, there's nothing the nearness of God cannot heal.
Good night. God bless.
Then the word of the Lord came to Jeremiah, I am the Lord, the God of all mankind. Is anything too hard for me?